Good evening, y'all. Dante's Old South this March of 2023 is a jewel in the crown of this gig on NPR. I'm your host, Clifford Brooks, and tonight we bring you a passel of brilliant musicians. Before we begin, I want to give a big shout out to Liberty Trust Hotel, the Red Phone Booth, WUTC and NPR, Richard Winham, and Michael Amade, two gentlemen who have helped me keep this mad train on the tracks. Now, without further ado, let's hear from Alicia Blue.
Jane says, I'm done with Sergio. He treats me like a rag doll. She hides the television. Says, I don't know him nothing. But if he come back again, tell him to wait right here for me. I'm gonna start tomorrow.
And up now, we have the incomparable musician, Alicia Blue. Alicia, how are you doing?
I'm well. I'm very happy to be here.
I mean, I like to do the classic, let's begin at the beginning. Tell us about how you got into and what drew you to be a musician.
I would say poetry was the catalyst. Being obsessed with Bob Dylan when I was 13 and on, I never thought I could do music. I didn't grow up with it. None of that in my family or school. And then my dream was I'll be the next Kerouac. And I went to college for writing. But I met this old soul singer who was in a wheelchair who needed some help in my last year of college. And I was like cleaning his house, helping him out, and saw these old records that had his face and name on them. And it said like CBS Records. I'm like, who is this guy? Like something happened. And took them home, listened to them, sounded like Jackie Wilson meets Johnny Mathis. And so he told me his whole story. Of course, there's some tragedy. He had a stroke at like 29, was like doing heroin. And, you know, ended his career, but he was being produced by Johnny Guitar Watson and Barry White and touring with Little Richard, and Jimi Hendrix was his band leader. So just like so much gold. And I was like, well, shit, like this is the horse's mouth, right? So can you teach me about singing? And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to take my poems and put them in this like little 3-minute vehicle to, or whatever minutes, right, to get regular kids like me when I was a kid to, you know, like make their head turn somehow the way Bob Dylan did for me.
Well, over the years, and as you've moved from LA to Nashville, how did you build your sound and how does that affect and resonate in your new album?
It was very, the move was very influential. I had gotten my first manager throughout the pandemic in 2020, and he was like, you need to go really learn how to write. You got to go to Nashville. And so I would drive out with my friend Tammy, and we would drive out and would just stay for a couple of weeks. And I would write and write and write with these people that were so great. And then we'd drive back, and it was pretty intense, the drive, but yeah. I was totally game for it. I really hadn't done anything like that. And so then I met Lincoln Parrish, who's the producer of my record that's coming out. And we just wrote so well together, and he would demo everything we wrote. And he would kind of bring this super organic, but more of like a rock underbelly to these intimate lyrics that I have. And so I got to kind of take whatever was this folk singer intimate thing and give it a little more power. And Lincoln had started that band Cage the Elephant. So that's kind of where that rumble comes from in him. And I loved it. I felt like it was everything I needed for everything I was feeling and writing about, because I was kind of summing up a lot of just intensity and chaos that was starting to settle and get really clear.
Some of that settling, if not most of it, comes from Coleman Barks, as I understand. Tell me about your connection to him and how he influences your work.
Oh, man. Well, he is the great interpreter of Rumi, if you don't know. So that alone makes him he's a poet, but it would take a poet to interpret Rumi. And if you love Rumi, you know what I mean. but there is this kind of, what did we say? He's a true Southern gentleman. Mm-hmm. But there is a love and a warmth, but and also direct fearlessness that is quite intense, I feel like, about Coleman. And you and I briefly just spoke. We had that in common. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the kind of abandonment that people like Coleman or Rumi call us to show up for is perpetually what I'm always looking for when I make music or make anything or exist on the planet, really. Like, why am I here other than to try to do that?
And that's not the only legendary name that's connected to you. You write songs with John Paul. What was that like?
It was probably, you can tell me, maybe it was like Hank when you hung out with Coleman Barks. It was incredible. So the first time that we met, it was throughout the pandemic, and it was actually over Zoom, which sounds awful. Like, who wants to meet a legend over Zoom? But sign me up, right? Like, and so I had these lyrics about kind of feeling like, God, you know, every time I walk into a room, no matter how old I get, I still feel like the youngest person in the room, just this kind of naivete and innocence that can be problematic sometimes. And so I was like, I'm bringing this to him. And I didn't know him very well. And so I tell him that right away. We go right into it. That's also his way. He doesn't like to talk before, he just wants to go, which is great. Mm-hmm. And he immediately says, this is wonderful, because my whole life I felt like the oldest person in the room. And I was like, well, we're going to write a great song. So here we go. And so we wrote Young. You know, we kind of inverted, you know, Dylan's Forever Young. We just kind of said, like, forget that. I don't want to stay young, even though that's all they do is tell you to stay young.
So there's no coincidence in the fact that your music transcends anything that could be troped. And this, you've given us a peek into why. So the broader lens, the bigger question would be, give us an idea what your overall creative process is like.
Yeah, I walk in the woods every morning, and I almost could say that is the creative process for me. Moving, walking. I think I've written 10 songs now that start with, I was walking here or there, wherever the place is, which is, it's funny. I got to find something new to say, even though it still means I was walking. But yeah, I walk for at least an hour, and right now I start every morning with listening to some Coleman translating Rumi. I'll start with one of those, and then I'll just kind of work on my whatever's going on inside of me and get the concepts that are ready for the next song. It always starts with lyrics for me. That's why I do music. It's everything that I need to say is what brought me to the musical portion of it all. Now, of course, especially as a student of Rumi, I feel like this is a total Rumi broadcast. So I'm a little embarrassed, but that's okay. as a true student, I guess, wordlessness and really no language is actually the goal. So, and music, you know, without words is still music. And so I think now I'm able to kind of dissolve into that more. And the people on the other side of me, like John Paul, who are in Lincoln, who've been holding a huge part of that musical bedrock for me down, are teaching me a lot. And I kind of feel like making this record, I was just talking to someone, was a true, true monastery boot camp of not, I don't even want to say songwriting, but of like, of the whole big picture of it all, like learning from all of these people. Yeah.
Tell us the title of the album that's out this month. And not only that, but the one that you're already working on that's coming out after this one.
Yeah. No title for the future one yet. But
okay, we'll let that pass. What about the one out now?
The one coming out is called Inner Child Work. It's called Inner Child Work Part 2, technically, because we released the first EP in July. And so this will be the final installment of it. So it's Inner Child Work Part 2 versus Inner Child Work Part 1. Yeah, I think I almost want to say it was bold to name it that, but it really wasn't. It's almost quite literal. I feel like I was working through so many orphans inside of me that were neglected. Mm-hmm. and they got to breathe on each one. Each different piece got to breathe on each song. Yeah.
The entire time we've talked, you have passion and you lace it with the technical, with the, and what I mean by mechanical, I don't mean faults. I mean the nuts and bolts and what makes songs work. And when you mention the silence between the notes, you rarely hear people say that because many people don't get that, but you do. And so, I mean, for those coming up in your footsteps and want to do something as wonderful and true as you do, what practical advice do you have for them?
Yeah. Well, my manager said this to me when we met and I took it to heart, but writer's write. That's it. Writer's write. So you got to write every day. It doesn't even matter. You know, I know there's so much cliche around that. People probably view it as a self-help book, but the artist's way, but it teaches you a discipline called the morning pages. And Julia Cameron, who wrote it, is no joke. Forget it doing the book, but if you write every morning, you're really just declogging the pipes. You know, you just spit out and you don't stop for 10 to 40 minutes, you know, fill up three pages. And I did that for 2 years, and now my brain just is a well-oiled wheel in terms of concepts. Like, I'm never really in a drought for a song concept or lyrics. You know, you gotta do it every day. And you also, I was talking to someone else about this. I think there's a respect you have to have for where you're at, where you are, where you're going, where you came from, in terms of, you know, it's vertical. If you don't view it as vertical, why are we here? You know? And so I think 99% of people forget that, which is why they say, you know, if you make it, you know, I think people forget you're supposed to keep going up. And I don't just mean up financially or whatever, but your whole art should be an evolution. Everything should be like a butterfly metamorphosis. If that's not happening inside of you, find out how to make that happen.
What makes you happy?
Well, it's 50% true, but I would say change, because we hate it, but it's so glorious once you get to the other side of the bend, you know?
I do. The daylight you bring is pierces any kind of hopelessness. I hope you know that.
I'm honored, man.
No, I mean, I was sent your music, and you always walk into it with a hesitation. And it took half of the first song before I realized that, and I don't flatter. I believe that flattery is just the only socially acceptable way to lie. It sticks with you. It sticks with you. And the song we're going to hear as soon as we part ways in this interview is called Dog Days in LA. And before we play that, tell us the backstory behind that.
Yeah, I'm an LA kid. It's a desert. There's really no seasons. The sky is, you know, mostly a blue white year round. And moving in Nashville, I just had my first round of seasons for a year, and it's glorious. I got to spend some time in the Northeast and saw all the red leaves. So since leaving, I had never left. For most, I think kids go to college and get some POV on their life, but this was my first time doing that. And that's how I was able to write Dog Days in LA. And I love that city, but you know, I was in an intense metamorphosis while there, and it was bumpy for sure.
Alicia, this has been, we have to have you back soon.
I'd be honored.
We have had a fraction of it. And it's, if I keep going, we would be here all night. I promise you this. Where can we find you online, and how can we keep up and buy your albums?
Yes, just aliciablue.com is the website. All one word. And then on all of the socials, Alicia Blue Music, all one word. And yeah, Alicia Blue on the streaming platforms. Alicia spelt like Alicia.
Alicia, it has been beautiful to have you on the show. And I mean it when I say that I want you back as soon as possible.
I'd be honored. Thank you for having me today.
I stopped strangling what I love. Good God, it took so long. The wind's carrying the jasmine. The clouds look like a dove. I stopped strangling what I love. Good God, it took so long. I'm watering the garden. I never felt so soft. I don't wanna live in the castle's bloom anymore. Ruby gets me higher than I should. I quit ripping out my stitches, everything is looking good. I don't wanna live in the castle's bloom anymore. Weighted blanket on my feet, close but it's not low. Friends are saying it's my season, how would it even look? Found you in the dead of night, almost fucked it up. Okay to feel it when I was 17. Said you don't have to fake it, I'm messing up my makeup, smiling at the breakdown of a homecoming queen. I don't wanna live in the castle's blue anymore. Ruby gets me higher than I should. I quit ripping out my stitches, everything is looking good. I don't wanna live in the castle's blue anymore. I don't wanna live in the castle's. I don't wanna live in the castle's. I don't wanna live in the castle's blue anymore.
Now, Dante's Old South brings you the soul from the western side of country, the side of country that God designed to get the hurt off your heart while helping you sing. Today, we bring you the wonderful Surrender Hill. Surrender Hill, how are y'all doing?
We are doing great all day long, man. I've been looking for Disneyland, and all of a sudden, here you are.
Well, I try to bring joy to the point that, you know, there's unicorns and winning lottery numbers and rainbows that taste like bubblegum. And as long as I brought that to you, my job here is done.
Absolutely. And
before I break my arm, pat my own self on the back, introduce y'all yourselves and give us some of your background.
Well, I am Robin Salmon, and next to me is my wife,
Afton Salmon.
Mm-hmm. And Afton was born Afton Seekins. And why don't you tell the Disney folks where you come from, Afton?
Well, I'm originally from Homer, Alaska, grew up between there and Arizona, and then you know, moved around, been in New York City and all sorts of places, and randomly ended up back in Arizona, where I met my husband, Robin, who is originally from South Africa.
Yep, I'm originally from South Africa. So I was born and raised in South Africa till I was 13. And then my family moved to the United States during the height of apartheid, when things were kind of not going so good over there.
Right.
And we ended up on a ranch in Texas, and I became a, like any hot-blooded 13-year-old boy, I became a cowboy because I was thrown into that, and I loved that lifestyle. But went to a boarding school where I became a punk rocker. So I was a very, very, a hybrid, like almost like some kind of strange Ford Tesla kind of situation, you know, all jammed up into one. And so that was me, and I was like this punk rock cowboy, and that's my deal right there.
That makes the next question so easy. We were talking before we came on camera, as it were, how to categorize your band, and now I know why there's no way to do that. How did these different areas influence the music that you make now?
You know, it's kind of cool. You know, for me, punk rock music was something that I fell into because of the simplicity of the music side of it. You know, mm-hmm. I grabbed an electric guitar and really couldn't play it. So that was really working towards my punk rock career. And so being able to just smash out chords, and I was one of those, you know, kind of angst-filled youths, because I went to boarding school from the first grade on, you know, and I hated school, period. But then boarding school just really shot it all to, you know, to pieces. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot that I was, you know, angry about, and that fit into my whole punk rock thing. But I tell you what, like, you know, for me, writing songs, you know, I learned how to write songs from listening to old cowboys sing on the ranch. And later on in life, I never really, at the time, I never appreciated it. But later on in life, I came to understand and appreciate how there was not such a far leap between punk rock and old cowboy tunes. You know, they were almost, you know, the same melodies, the same structures, the same gripes, you know. And so that's kind of why I think where I ended up now is in this place where I'm singing about, you know, times on the ranch and whatever, even, you know, contemporary life. It all comes back to this very, very simple punk rock attitude. Meeting Afton. So Afton was a gentler side of country music, so to speak, this more melodic and softening side. And when the two of us got together and it just sort of forced itself into this thing that is Surrender Hill right now, there's a cathartic beauty that happened naturally because of this stone getting kind of rubbed up against this velvet diamond.
That's so nice.
Yeah, no, and I'm the diamond. I'm the velvet right. Diamond. So when it all came together, it really just became this thing that I am in love with. I hate to, you know, going back to, I'm not patting myself on the back, but it's just, I'm so lucky that I fell into this particular thing, because singing these songs that we do is such a selfish thing. You know, it brings such joy just to perform the songs and to have anybody listen to them. I don't even know what that means, man.
The music, all right, we talked about the sound, the fusion of that, and where the roots of it came from and are now planted. The songwriting process, a question that I love to ask musicians is, how do you feel that writing poetry and writing songs close enough to see how they kind of run next to each other? How do you see that?
When I was in the eighth grade, one of our assignments at school was to keep a journal, you know, and I started writing these poems. This was before, you know, before I could really play music or anything. And I started writing these poems. They were terrible. I started writing these poems because I was trying in the only way I knew to impress my teacher and make him think that I had a soul. But I really had this thing in my head of like, man, I want to write things that are kind of, you know, not quite deep, but really sort of personal, that almost somebody's going to read. This is so conniving, you know, that somebody's going to read and like, wow, did he really mean for me to read what he just wrote? You know what I mean? I was in a boarding school where the kids around me were just these super smart, intelligent children. Uh-huh. And I was kind of more street, you know, or not street, but kind of farm smart, you know,
right,
growing up in South Africa, rural area, and then on a ranch, you know. And so for me, that's where the poetry thing came from. When I started getting into writing songs and everything, I think that I forgot about the poetry of it. And this is kind of funky because I spent, you know, the next 25, this is dating myself and saying what my age is compared to my wife, but I spent the next 25 years writing songs and not really thinking about poetry until I met Afton. And when I met Afton, all of a sudden I started listening and being presented with lyrics that she was writing. And I was going, holy heck, this is poetry. And just from, you know, I don't want to answer for Afton, but, you know, her songwriting came from her journals and writing in journals and everything when she was living in New York City. And I think that a lot of her journals, so many of the pages, I mean, I did not read, were actually poems. You know, there was a lot of poetry going on in there that later on, you know, her first songs came from that. There obviously is a parallel, you know, a huge one. And I think that for me, you know, the biggest one is more aligned with digging something out of your system that needs to be dug out and putting it on a page. And I think that if you get away from the mechanics of fundamentals and structures and all that kind of stuff of poems and songs, mm-hmm. basically they both come from something that's deep inside your gut, and you have to dig it out and get it out. And if you can say that in a beautiful way and make it rhyme, man, all the better.
The heat and the excitement, the electricity, the synergy between y'all and the music and your histories and your travels have all culminated to create this really cool event in Texas this April. Let's talk about that.
Well, I tell you what, you know, my time growing up in Texas was incredibly precious, and as it was in South Africa, but especially in Texas, you know. And I never, I kind of took it for granted when I was there. You know, you're just living your life and you're going through it. For example, I traded in my saddle and my gun for a guitar. Mm. And I wish I had that saddle and gun. Not because I want the gun, because it's a gun, but right, because it was of what it, you know, what it was to me as a kid. You know, at the time, it didn't mean to me what it really should have and what it has come to mean in later years. And so when I found myself back in the Southwest, and this time being in Arizona, and I was fortunate enough to meet Afton, and we got together and started writing our version of whatever the music is that we write and sing, there was so much of our frontier upbringing that started entering our music lyrically, but also, you know, kind of in the structure of the songs and the fabric of them, you know, the color of them and the feel and everything just had this kind of slightly Western frontier kind of thing to it. And in 2015, she and I left Arizona and came across the country, and we were playing shows across the country. And a big place that we stopped was in the hill country of Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's this beautiful part of Texas, but it's a place that, for me, not being born and raised in my early years in America, for me, it's like that is what America is. The West and this cowboy spirit and this the strength of that spirit, you know. So we played shows there, and now every year since then, we've gone back to the hill country, and we'll spend as much time as we can playing some music there. And one of the things that we've never been able to do that I have always just kind of dreamed about doing is taking our music and the songs that were inspired by this ranch called the Wyo in the hill country of Texas. Now, this place, the Wyo Ranch, when I lived there as a young kid, was 150,000 acres. You know, it was the largest working ranch in America at the time. And the embodiment of, you know, the Wild West was on this ranch and still lives there now, you know, even though it's changed hands and things have changed a lot. To go there and sing songs that are written about the time that I lived there and inspired by that period in America is a mind-blowing thing. And we were able to put that together for this coming April. We're going to spend April 20th. We're going to go to the Wyo, and we're going to walk up there at lunchtime, and they're going to cook us a brisket the way it's supposed to be cooked. And we're going to eat brisket. And then we're going to spend the afternoon just kind of drinking whiskey at the bar in the Wyo. Because it's open bar, my friend. The bar is always open. And then they're going to come up and do a very special barbecue for us. And we're going to then follow this entire thing with a concert by Surrender Hill, if they are still standing and able to form melodies and words. Because hopefully we will be able to, but you never know. Doing a show at the Wyo Ranch, and everybody's invited.
Seeing how this is come together, it's because of the joy in it, and that you love doing it. It comes from an enormous amount of sacrifice and work. Was there ever a point where this is a thing that you went, this ain't gonna work, we need to stop? Was there ever a chance? Was there ever a point where you thought you were gonna give up?
You know, I don't think there was ever a point of giving up. But since I was 17 years old, I've been pushing this peanut up the hill, and it's always been a hill. There have been moments when, for me, this is just, you know, from in my career, where things were just sailing and kind of easy. And it's interesting because those were great moments, but the moments that I've loved the most have been the ones with the struggle. Because at the end of that struggle, hopefully and gratefully, there has always been a reward. And when Afton, you know, this sounds so unbelievably Hallmark, but when Afton and I met, and all of a sudden all the music clicked, all the songs that I tried to write and thought that I couldn't, because how dare you, all of a sudden I wrote because they made sense. And I realized that this is the moment and where I'm supposed to be.
Well, for your better half, did you have any kind of moment like that?
No. I mean, my passion for music has kind of evolved. I started out as dancing was my main passion. And that's what I moved to New York City for, and did that for 8 or 9 years, and was a, you know, professional choreographer, and kind of did that, but the city wore me down. And then I started songwriting, and that's where I met Robin. And now thinking about where we are, and we've definitely had our ups and downs with the music, because we don't necessarily fit in anywhere or anything like that, but we love what we do. And we know that we, you know, make people feel something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll get to those days sometimes where we're like, you know, what are we doing this for? You know, but we always come back to the fact that regardless of where the music goes, we're not going to stop. Like, this is, you know, we would never do anything else but play music.
There's nothing else we can.
Yeah. No. Before COVID, We would go to South Africa and take, you know, take a month or two off, and we'd always play music, but from the gigs, because we play pretty consistently. I mean, we play what, 200 shows a year,
about 250,
you know, we're very busy with the music and our voices get tired and we get worn down and stuff like that. And then when we have some time off, we both feel each other getting like real edgy because we're not playing enough music. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we always come back to it, you know, and people ask us all the time. It's like, why aren't you guys in Nashville? Why aren't you guys, you know, I don't understand why your music hasn't hit the masses. You know, I'm like, well, you know, it is what it is. It's just going to, the timing is going to happen when it happens. And if it doesn't, we're still going to do.
I think a very interesting thing as I'm sitting here listening to Afton, it's the music business is one of the very few occupations or whatever you want to call it, things where people will constantly say to you, you're going to make it, or just hang in there, guys.
Yeah.
You're going to make it. And I understand why people say that. Okay. But there's such a thing, like Afton and I are so lucky, man. We do not take it for granted. We feed our family, pay our rent, and are able to live a wonderful life by writing songs and performing them. And sometimes when I'm in my slightly ornery space that I don't get into that often,
right,
they'll say to me, you know, Robin, just hang in there. You know, you're going to make it. And I feel like, man, if I haven't made it yet, then I don't know. Because if this isn't making it, then I'm living one hell of a good life doing something I love to do off here with that. Because I understand what people...
Their perspective,
you know,
is different.
Their perspective is, you know, if you're not Taylor Swift or something like that, then you haven't made it. But there's just such a... And I guess there was a time in my life when I used to think in those terms, you know, I was really pushing for something that was, you know, I wanted to be Bono. But over the years, I mean, my gosh, we live a life. We have beautiful children. I have a beautiful wife. We live in a wonderful place. We make music, make money by playing our music and the songs we write. And every day I wake up and I feel like I've made it. But that doesn't mean that we won't push harder and want it to go further and bigger or whatever that is, you know, because it's wonderful to play for people. You always want bigger shows, just to kind of like to spread the word more.
Follow that line. I mean, really, to follow that thread as we roll this around, what advice, what direction can you give aspiring musicians to give them a realistic idea of how to make this happen?
I just recently saw Keith Urban doing like a live show or something on television. I can't remember what it was for, you know. You know, Keith Urban, like, you know, this guy, he's a hardworking musician, man. And he's paid his dues. He's done everything. And he's earned everything that he's gotten. And they asked him that question, you know, what is there something you could tell aspiring musicians? And he said, no. It was like, not a thing. They need to go out there and find it. And I love that answer because it really is true. The only thing I can add to that is that, you know, every musician, yeah, you do. You need to just stick with it. That's the only thing I can add to it is that, man, keep moving. If you are, you know, if this is something you truly love and are about and you can't live without, then all you got to do is just keep playing music, writing songs, and going to the places that you want to be and see yourself at. That's something I did, you know, when I was, you know, 19 years old. I realized that when I started my band in Estes Park, Colorado, I was like, we're not going to get discovered here. What is it that I want? And I took that band first to Austin, Texas, and then I took that band to New York City. You know, you've got to dress the way you want to be. You've got to act and be who you are every single day. It's not a costume. And I think that's the biggest thing I can pass on to anybody coming along. You're not dressing up for the show. This is what you wear every day. Put it on when you get up in the morning and go and do it and wear it and be that. That's the best thing I can say.
and let the unfortunate gigs just roll off your back, because the next one will be totally different.
Yeah.
And so much better.
Without a doubt, we're going to have you back on this show. If it was up to me, and it actually is, I would have you on every month. If you would be agreeable to it, it would be really cool to have you on the show and have a piece recorded while you're out there on the ranch.
Absolutely. We'll do it.
That'd be cool. All right. We have Surrender Hill, man. I want you to reintroduce yourselves and tell us where we can find you online.
I'm Robin Salmon.
I'm Afton
Salmon. And we are Surrender Hill. And you can find us at www.surrenderhill.com.
Y'all, I cannot thank y'all enough for coming on. I truly cannot. I cannot. And now, before we bring on our next guest, let's hear about all of this love, pleasure, and pain that Surrender Hill can bring to you.
It's been 6 months of fall. Been through it all, and the devil even welcomed me home. I lost my religion between the wine and the wishing for a reason to answer the call. But I'm on the mend now, I passed on the sin. Now I'm ready to get back in the saddle again. Choices. I've been stuck in the canyons of my past. I burned through all my chances. I sold out all my dances, and I'll be damned if I ain't let it all go.
And now on Dante's, we have the legendary musician, podcaster, and author, Mr. Michael Amade. Michael, how you doing, boss?
Doing good, man. Cliff, you changed my life, you know?
It's the least I can do. I imbued greatness upon thee, sir, and you're quite welcome. At least you can give me the credit on radio, and NPR all knows it now.
Well, you know, you and I, we've known each other. We've known each other a long time at this point. And we still do a lot of stuff together. You know, we do the podcast, This Business of Music and Poetry together. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to give you a hand with this thing sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's I feel like as the years go by, our paths converge even more and more, you know, and it's a cool relationship to have. So thanks for having me.
Oh, dude, it's overdue, man. And we have so much in similar that I want to take this Frosty and Two Roads Taken, because you took a very different one than I and made some huge strides in it, dude. And that's music. Tell us about the band that you're in now that truly is renovating the way we look at country music.
You know, thanks for that. So the group that I'm in is, believe it or not, this year it is 70 years old. This band's been running for 70 years. So there's been, you know, 50 or so musicians throughout that time.
Right.
I joined at first in 2006 and I've played kind of off and on with these guys, but I've now, you know, sometimes you take a journey, you do something for a bit, you leave, you come back and you see it in an entirely new and different way. And it's maybe changed a bit too. So you kind of match.
Right.
And, it's kind of come to a point in my life where I'm able to sit here and go, there's a huge future in this, even though it's been there for 70 years. There's been different dynasties within this group. You know, there's been one group that suddenly lasts for 20 years and does all this stuff. And there's another one that lasted for 30 years. And there's been some great people in there, but I think we're really at a cusp right now where it's really getting ready to once again take off. And this group is called the Flying W Wranglers. We play at the Flying W Ranch in Colorado Springs, among other places. But you know, this group is a group that's already been inducted into the Western Music Hall of Fame. It's played Carnegie Hall, played all these places. And we are at this moment, I think we're taking it firmly into the 21st century. We're just about 23 years behind the curve, but we're it's a ranch. Time moves slowly. But we're finally, you know, we're using a huge, you know, like 90-foot video wall. We play to between 50,000-60,000 people a year out there and play, you know, almost every night throughout the summer and the fall and then winter. And we play old Western music. So it's not even country.
Right.
It's old Western. You know, and it's funny because people don't understand country and Western are different things. And Western it's actually, in my mind, it has a lot of great elements of country, but it is actually a little bit more higher minded as far as the musical vocabulary.
Yeah.
And there's 4- and 5-part harmonies going on in this thing. The poetry in the lyrics is actually a little bit elevated above country. And I love country music too. I love good country music, but Western is very different. And the guy who wrote a lot of this stuff was named Bob Nolan. And he was really inspired by Keats and by some of these great poets. And it shows. Mm-hmm. You can see some really, really cool stuff. So it's a pleasure for me to be able to sing those songs every night.
And you just made my job easy. They're going to think we set this up, but we did not. You're also, speaking of songwriting, poetry, Keats, you have an extraordinary creative writing career as well. Tell me about that.
Well, thanks. You know, for me, and I know that you and I kind of agree on this, but I'm making the point because people listening haven't had the privilege of hearing us talk for hours upon hours upon hours. Like that. Although you can always listen to This Business of Music and Poetry and hear many of those hours. Upon
many,
hours.
Many, many.
but I do see eventually everything kind of starts to become the same thing. Right. Agreed. And I remember hearing a story of Matt Damon was talking about Jack Nicholson, and I won't tell the story now, but you should look it up if you can. But one of the things that Jack Nicholson said to him was, you know, I never would have been able to make it this far as an actor if I wasn't a great writer.
Yeah.
And the thing I realize is being a writer makes me a much better musician and a much better performer, and being a performer and being a writer makes me a much better writer. And they all just kind of feed back into each other, because what are we doing up on stage but telling stories? And what am I doing when I'm sitting down but telling a story? And so that's a thing that I just absolutely have always loved. And in fact, someone reminded me the other day when I was a kid, you know, we'd go see movies and stuff, and they always noticed that I was never looking at the screen. I was looking at the audience, watching reactions. I was like, I was aware of what was happening, but I want to see how they responded to it.
Right.
And so that's storytelling, right? That's me trying to pay attention. So this is a long way for me to say that, you know, writing is a huge part for me. And one of the things I've been really leaning in on, and Cliff, I don't know if you're even aware of this much, but I've been really leaning into the medium now of fictional serialized podcasts and things like that, which include you know, narration characters, music in the background, all that. And actually I've been working on a project that has been worked for 7 years, written, rewritten, and it's finally like an inch from done.
Right on.
All recorded, edited, whole thing. And it's going to be going out to a few interested studios and places. And for me, I'm finding a lot of joy in that particular medium because it meets writing, it meets music. It's very cinematic in its own way, but it's also what we're doing here. It is through verbal storytelling and the theater of the mind. So that's been, I'm working on a book project, but I'm not going to talk about that until it's ready.
All right.
But the thing that I've really been finding is a lot of joy creatively writing for these audio storytelling kind of scenarios. So that's really where I'm spending a lot of time. And of course I'm always writing poetry and songs. And I mean, that never stops.
No, man. And it parlays in my last question for you, cousin, is, what makes you happy?
So I know you ask people that question sometimes, and I wish I had a great answer for this. I think the thing that I would, at least at this point, maybe I'll look back in 2-3 years from now and laugh at myself, but I think the thing that makes me happy is I truly love working on things that I care about, doing good work with people that I really love and enjoy working with. And I'm very blessed in my life to be able to spend my life doing things that I love to do. And I am happy to have long-term friendships, really working relationships with people, yourself included, Cliff.
Thank you.
That allow me to continue to pursue these things and pursue what's in my heart and try to put something out into the world that is of honest intention and is pure. And that my friends and I can give as a gift to others and enjoy the process. And so for me, that is the thing that genuinely I am thankful for every morning. And I make a point of pausing and being thankful for it every day. And I think, and that's my life now. And honestly, I think that's what makes me happy. And what continuously makes me happy.
That's what life is about, cousin. That's what life is about. And for people to get a taste, to get a full taste of what you do, how do we find you on social media?
Well, I would just look up Michael Amade. I'm the guy in the cowboy hat. And then you can look me up on michaelamade.com or flyingw.com if you want to find out about how to come out and see the band in Colorado Springs.
All right, man. Well, you and I will be talking soon, and even sooner, we'll have you back on this show. So when something happens, you let me know. You feel me?
Sounds great. Hey, thanks so much for having me, buddy.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank y'all so much for tuning in this March of 2023 for Dante's Old South. Again, I'm your host, Clifford Brooks, and my heart goes out to all of tonight's guests and you. Please be kind, hold the line, and always be completely you. Good night.